Nicole, did you ever notice how the sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love.
So you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Nevermind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Lorehound's coverage of The Wheel of Time, Season 3, Episode 7, Golden Eyes. I'm Alicia, the wolf inside Perrin's head.
And I'm John, a white cloak and definitely not a dark friend.
For most of the episode, there will be spoilers through Season 3, Episode 7 and equivalent book stuff, but we will not be spoiling future book stuff. If you want that, then stick around until after the outro credits for our White Tower talk with full series book spoilers. And by the way, before we get into this new episode, I just wanted to share a fun theory that's going around Blue Sky and probably elsewhere online about last week's episode. So have you heard this theory that the hills of Tenchico, so again, the hills of Tenchico, and you know, it's obviously it's about ladies' curves, where one's not enough and three's too many and two bring a man to his knees. People are wondering, what if once upon a time the song was originally written about the Adam, because there's two bracelets to bring a man in the collar to his knees. And then it says, these hills will flatten a whole ship's crew. These hills will make a man out of you.
Huh. That's very good. I like that a lot. I wonder if we're going to get some interviews after the season where they're like, yep, that was that.
Yeah, or else they'll be like, no, but it is super fun, the theories you guys come up with.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, do you guys go outside ever?
Yes, with phones. So maybe I should actually start with my hot take on this episode, because I think I liked it a little bit better than you.
Sure.
I loved all of the mountain scenery, and I thought that this was a decent battle episode. I was pointing out that I think maybe it's the first actual battle we got. You know, we were supposed to get one in the season one finale. Obviously, that didn't happen with COVID. Mm-hmm. And then I guess we did have the battle last season, but this one, I don't know, felt more out in the open, I suppose.
Yeah, and it felt more hand-to-hand, even though we had some hand-to-hand with the white cloaks last time. Mm-hmm. It just felt different, which was good.
Yeah, it felt more battle-y. But I did, for some reason, you know, going in, people said there were two amazing episodes. And for some reason, I was thinking it was going to be like the two one location episodes. So four, Rhoidean, obviously that was definitely, you know, the case. And then I thought that this was going to be the other episode that the people who had seen them all said was the best. But I think actually they were referring to episode six. So I went into this one with too high of expectations. And then I was whelmed plus, you know, I noticed that they had made decisions with the budget for the season. And I think they made the right decisions, but then there were certain things like from the book. So I was like, oh, is this big thing going to happen? And I'm like, no, I think they've, you know, used their budget elsewhere. We're not going to get like a bunch of wolves rushing in or something like that. So, whelmed plus, we'll go through the details, but what did you think?
I think that's a good way to put it, is whelmed. I don't think I would put a plus on it. Like, it was fine. And I think what's most disappointing about that for me is that the battle in the two rivers in the books is perhaps one of the coolest battles in the whole series. And I just don't feel like it was earned. And the reason for that is that I understand the impulse that people have, showrunners have, mm-hmm. to do a bottle episode. I know it's not really like a traditional bottle episode, but like a one location episode. But I feel like that really undermined the development in the Two Rivers. I know we had Two River scenes before this, but we didn't really have training scenes before this. We mm-hmm. didn't have like the development of like, hey, they're really good at shooting bows until this episode. Like, you can't tell me in one episode they're really good at shooting bows and then like they could defend themselves against Trollocs later in the episode.
Well, there were season one references with Rand and stuff, but yeah, there were other things. I think they could have reminded us of a few things. I also just like, I don't know. I spent some time thinking about the Two Rivers plotline this season because, for example, I thought that they, going into the season, I expected they would bring the Tuathon back in earlier, and then because that would set up, you know, that whole reaction mm-hmm. we got with Bane and Chiad about like, oh, Aram's cute, but he's a dirty lost one, you know,
yeah.
Just that contempt shown there would have been handy to have that interaction before Rand went through the columns in yeah. Rhoydian. But then again, of course, we needed that to happen before the whole thing with Aram and Ila.
Yeah,
this episode when he defends the baby,
right.
So, yeah, I just thought, like, if they brought the Tuathon in earlier, then they would have cut into the whole establishing the stuff with the sisters and the white cloaks and stuff. And it's just, again, like, oh, just wish we had one more episode or two more episodes every season. But that's
yeah, and that was something that I mentioned to you, too, is, like, I don't know if this is a Wheel of Time problem or, like, a TV in 2025 problem, where we just can't have 10 episode seasons unless you're on Apple now. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the marriage to 8 episodes is and why we're there, but this show clearly needs one or two more episodes per season.
Mm. I am curious, and I have the feeling with both of us that we came in with big book expectations, and I knew that it would have to be pared down, but I have a feeling if we weren't book readers, we might not have been bothered by the same thing. So I'm very much looking forward to having a conversation with Jean after this episode airs. We're going to put out a special extra episode for the public feed just as a check-in with a non-book reader, just to see how he's responding to everything. Because I think this one's definitely going to go down better with non-readers.
Yeah, probably. And maybe I'm just a crank. And that's yeah. fine.
But it was like, for me, I was like, where are the wolves? Where are the wolves? There's no wolves coming. Although there's a reactor who made me feel better about that. Arroyo B is me, is a YouTube reactor. And when she was watching episode 5, she saw the wolf's heads on pikes in the white cloak camp. And she said, oh, so they're not going to be available for Perrin to call on. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fair. They did warn us.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I wasn't even that bothered by the lack of wolves. Like, it would have been great to have them.
I know, it's my
favorite. That's the kind of thing. That's yeah. And the wolves are important at several mm-hmm. points in the books. And I think there are more important scenes for them to be in.
Right, sure.
But that actually, I do understand that kind of budget cut. What I don't understand is why squish everything into one episode and not have a season of development? And that's what I think bothers me the most, because that is not just, that's not having too few episodes. That's not having too little budget. That is, I am the showrunner and I made the decision to put everything in this episode.
I don't know, because I was thinking like, what could they have done away with? I'm like, well, maybe, you know, like the Alana Maxim drama. I actually like the Alana Maxim drama existing. I didn't like the way they did it in episode 5 with like having Maxim running off or something. They could have brought in the Tuathon and just had the drama more with everyone together. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know they had the Tuathon be like the warning that the Trollocs were coming that night, but they could have easily written around that, right? Like, they could have easily had like somebody scouting and be like, it looks like they're night away. You know, like there's no reason that had to be the Tuathon.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't want to pay them for that many episodes.
I'm like, why are the two Aiel seem to be the only scouts? Like, and Faeol, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
That being said, I wanna end on a positive note.
Mm-hmm.
I did really like a lot of the action. I really liked the interaction between Perrin and Dane Bornhold. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the Fael and Perrin interactions. I thought those were all really, really good. And I thought that they really did a good job, even perhaps a better job than in the books, of Aram's arc.
Yes, yes. Because it made me also really excited to see what's next with Aram. Aram is someone that I enjoy from the books more than others, I think. And yeah, they set that up well. And I think also just the way that ties into what we learned in episode 4 was well done too. So
yeah, there's no baby in the books. So they made him a lot more like, right. they made his motivations a lot more clear, right? Is this whole like, I'm not letting anyone else die.
Right. And they also, they set it up, you know, it's Robert Jordan is one who will do sudden twists. Whereas here, I could have told you from season 1, like Aram's not 100% in on the way of the leaf. You know, whenever there's a comment to be made, he's like, yeah, this is just like the thing my people do.
I remember him setting up Aram pretty well, though. He spends like half the book being like, with Aram like eyeing Perrin and eyeing the swords, right? Like, I don't know if that was an example of a sudden twist, but yeah, there are sudden twists.
True. All right, well, shall we get into the details of the episode itself? Because there are a lot of like character moments I really appreciated. Like even, you know, RIP Daes Conger. Don't worry if you are a show only and you don't know who that name is. That's the Wisdom who died at the end. She was just basically thrown in there as a nod for book readers. And so they had another channeler. Even though
that was another throwaway. I was like, fine.
Yeah, I don't know. She had her whole little arc. All right, anyway, we'll talk about it. But so we are here to talk about season 3, episode 7, Golden Eyes, written by Dave Hill, who's previously best known for working on Game of Thrones seasons 5 through 8.
Oof. And
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, that makes some sense. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, that had some of the best battle work for sure. Mm, like that had,
yeah, I'm sure that's why they,
yeah, Battle of the Bastards is in that. And that's my top battle on TV ever.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Yeah. Yep. And the director of this episode was Kieran Donnelly, who also directed episodes 1 and 2 and is also directing the finale. And this is the shortest one of the season at 58 minutes. We'll be talking through one story arc at a time as usual. So that means we'll be discussing scenes out of the order in which they aired. And do you want to set up the first part?
Raising the banner. The entire Two Rivers trains. Maxim trains the men with pikes and poles until they demand the long bows they're used to. Alana trains the Cawthon girls and a third powerful channeler she's found in town. Wisdom Daes Conger. The rest of the women's circle train themselves. If no one else can be bothered to do it, thank you very much. And Perrin trains 2 young apprentice blacksmiths. A group of townsfolk unhurl a banner with a wolf on it and begin calling Perrin Lord Goldeneyes. Perrin doesn't like it because he's worried he's leading them all to their death, but Tafail tells him that the people need him to embrace his leadership roles. And the banner gives them hope and a reason to fight to survive, which they'll need because Perrin is certain the big attack is coming that night.
So, yeah, I like the whole Trollocs are afraid of wolves, although it is funny. And I guess this reflects real life, you know, that the Trollocs are afraid of wolves, but still the White Cloaks call wolves dark friends.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're not filled with logic, the White Cloaks.
No, just like real life.
can I say too, if the Two Rivers men are trained on longbows, which are for longer distances, why are they so close to the?
Yeah,
that bothered me a lot. I was like, shouldn't you be like up on a building?
Exactly, or like where Alana was. Alana should have been with the archers.
Right. I completely did not understand that.
Yeah, Alana should have been where they were with the archers, and then they should have had a scout running back and forth to report back to town. Not that all the channelers need to go back to town after they do their one thing.
Right.
Yeah, that there was some awkwardness in the battle setup, and we'll talk about it in this week's Lorecast is going to be about Manetherin and the Two Rivers, and they have some differences in like the layout versus from the books versus the TV show. Cause in the books, like it's really a field, a plain. And that it was like where the Manetherin fell is literally Aemon's, the king's field. which they call Emmons Field, is what it's called in the books. Two rivers.
They're going to call me Grandelf, aren't they? Or Gandalf. Sorry. No, this is much better than that. This is like a natural evolution of a name over centuries.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Emmons Field is like the main town that all this is taking place in. Two Rivers is the region. But yeah, that's what the lore cast is going to be about. We'll talk a little bit more about it here. But one thing I have to say is we'll bring up Tysher Manetherin, which is, and they said it in English, basically. Alana says, the old blood runs deep in these mountains. And in the book, someone would say, Tysher Manetherin.
Yeah, blood. Lan liked to say that a lot.
So Daze Conger brought her up already. She was in the pilot, by the way. She was there on that first battle on Winter Night. And yeah, she showed up several times this season, but I think a lot of people, I know even book readers didn't recognize she was there. And the reason why I've known she was there the whole time is because I study the credits every week because of this podcast. So I think people will recognize her better on rewatches. I think she got some good lines. She's like, you want me to be part of your child army? Depends if I'll have to stop drinking.
That was pretty good. A solid comeback.
Yeah. It's just like one of those things like her, Sembui, those two kids with Perrin are the Alcine boys. These are all characters who play, you know, moderate, minor parts in the books. And so we're getting nods on screen. And so I think, I hope that show only watchers don't feel overwhelmed trying to remember who they are, because even like book watchers don't even realize that it's those characters, because it's not important. There's too many people.
Yeah. She's going to die in this episode anyway. Who cares?
Right. But I think some of the stuff that gives this show such a high rewatchability is when you go back. Like, I know, for instance, Jack Alcine was in previous episodes and he was not credited in this one. So I'm like, oh wait, what happened to Jack Alcine then? I have to pay more attention next rewatch. Or the baker boy that Maxim was complaining about his buns before, he was credited in this episode. I'm like, oh, where was he? So I have to pay more attention on my third rewatch to see if
you are truly the champion of side characters, Alicia.
But that's what I love about this. I mean, I love it about the books. The book has so many endless side characters, and a bunch of them made it into the show, and stuff like that. And also, like, the can you spot the Aiel? Can you spot the Grey Men? It makes it a lot of fun to rewatch these. So I mean to say.
No, I hear you. Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, just the difference with Daze, she is a character in the books. She does become the wisdom after Nynaeve leaves. She's not a channeler in the books, but, you know, she doesn't die in the books at this point either. But in the books, Varen was there, and there were more girls that Alana recruited. She recruited one of the Cawthon sisters and other girls. But of course, yeah, I think this makes sense as a simplification and a replacement for Varen based on what they have time for.
Yeah, I agree. That's totally fine. I do wish we had more Varen this season, but
yeah,
that's mourning that I'll have to do later.
Yeah. I think she'll play a larger role in the future. Well, if she makes it through next episode, who knows?
Who knows indeed? Who knows if we'll make it through the next episode, because we might not get a renewal.
Oh no, stop. I mean the finale for one.
Yeah.
I liked, though, that the girls, the Cawthon girls, they were, like, realistically teenagers. Like, can you throw lightning? The other Aes Sedai did the last time the Trollocs came.
Yeah, that was pretty solid. I did not buy that they were able to throw a flame all of a sudden and, like, fully burn this guy alive, especially when they just said we can't touch the source. But I'm okay. I'm okay with hand-waving it.
Yeah, I am embracing that they must have the fast learning talent that we talked about in the talents episodes. So fast learning talent in the books, it's just basically at some point they're like, you know, some characters can just see a weave once and learn it, and hand wave, moving on.
Yeah, and sorry everyone that was a little bit later in the day. I accidentally scheduled that episode for a week later than it was supposed to come out. So there are some benefits to screeners, and then there are some calendar confusions.
One exciting thing that was shouted out this episode that people have been waiting to be clarified in the show is Alana says to Daze, you can see my weaves. That means you can channel. So that's a thing in the books where, you know, you can only see the weaves of a channeler if you are also a channeler of the same gender. And in the show, that's been somewhat confusing from a viewer perspective, because obviously they want us all to see the weaves. So we weren't sure who could see them. So that clarifies.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what they're doing. And there's this whole thing in the books they make clear that, like, when two women duel with the power, like, if somebody who couldn't channel was looking at them, it would just look like two people standing still looking at each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, in the show, they added these, like, hand motions, but...
Well, okay, the Aes Sedai do hand motions. That's one of the things that defines them as Aes Sedai.
Yeah, but I think sometimes it's like seen a little bit as a crutch, right? Like with certain things, after you've done the weave, like you're not like holding it with your hands, right?
Well, but that is the problem with the Aes Sedai versus other channelers, like say the wise ones. The Aes Sedai are so dependent on their hand motions because that's how they learn them. So if the Aes Sedai lose use of their hands or something, like, for instance, okay, that is why they had Imanvelda cutting off their hands in previous seasons, even though that's an addition from the book, but it's because they can't channel if they can't use their hands, because that's how they learn to channel.
Okay. I buy it.
But yeah, I liked, you already mentioned the Two Rivers bows. I like that they called that out, although I do not think the bows they showed are nearly long enough, but...
Yeah, but I guess there's, like, how how big can they be without people looking very tiny with them?
Yeah, well, but that is the thing, is, like, anytime the Two Rivers contingent comes and they bring out their longbows, like, new people are laughing at them, and then once they see them in action, they're like, I'm sorry, I did not realize your game.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
So Senbui calling Maxim out was like very on point, and I'm glad that they did that. And indeed, don't worry if you don't know, is Senbui angry old man who complains a lot, days post Nynaeve wisdom. That's all you need to know about them. Just pointing out, though, for the book readers, no Master Luhan, who is the one who trained Perrin in blacksmithing, but I guess he didn't make the cut.
Yeah. Man, that's fine.
That's fine.
I think they should have had him in the show and then had Perrin kill him in the first episode instead of his wife.
Yeah.
I think that would have been way more meaningful for book viewers, and it would avoid problematic tropes.
Yeah, maybe in retrospect they would have done that now that they've heard so much complaining about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get Perrin and Fael. They have their through line in this episode where he's trying to do the over chivalrous thing, which is straight out of the books. And she's like, no, like, I don't know why I'm pulled into the Tavirin net. I like you. And I guess what? I just like fighting. So let me do it.
Yeah. And I love that journey in this episode. I think that's one of the most effective things, is Perrin by the end of the episode going, stay behind me. What? You can't keep me? Because you need to get the stragglers. And I'm like,
yeah. Cool. Yeah, I like
because
that.
That is a thing in the books that lasts so long, and it's so obnoxious, is Perrin being like, I can't risk Fael. And it's just, I groan every time I read it. I groan. Yeah. And so the show is doing better in that sense. I think I'm liking this episode more the more we talk about it. I think the things that bother me are getting smaller, and the things I liked are getting bigger.
Yeah, I think it is one of those episodes. And that's why I think, like, just us being book readers, is that's where the first thing is, we're like, oh, wait, yeah, it feels so rushed compared to, like, in the books, that it's not just one battle. There's an ultimate battle, but there's like a week of battles going on with all these different things that happened. And of course, they can't do that in the show. And so necessarily, however they condense it, it's going to feel a little bit like, you know, it takes a beat to think about it more. I liked what Fael said to Perrin, we deserve respect before battle and honor after it. Save your guilt for the enemies that escaped. And then that's kind of foreshadowing, because Perrin lets them escape is a trade.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about that later. I have thoughts
we'll
about
get
that.
There. All right. We'll get there. We do get that nice moment where Perrin gives Matt's sisters the sketch of Matt blowing the horn. And that was another nice teenager moment. Like, Matt, the bladder blower, Matt, the sheep tutor.
What do you think about the girls not being taken to the White Tower?
Yeah, so I have something about that in the White Tower segment to talk about. I know why from like an story outside the story construction why they would be doing that, but I'm wondering what Alana's immediate motivation is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. All right. We'll save it for the spoilers.
Yeah, yeah. All right, should we talk about some refugees with familiar faces?
I love those. Meanwhile, a caravan of wagons shows up at the gate. It's the Tuathon, leading a crowd of refugees from all over the two rivers, all running from the Trolloc attacks and hoping to take refuge in the relative safety behind the walls now built around this town, Emmons Field, in book terms. Egwene's season one flirtation, Aram, and his grandmother, Ila, are leading the Tuathon, but Ila's husband, Rain, was killed the night before in a Trolloc attack. Taran is glad to see his old friends, nonetheless, and return the aid they gave to him and Egwene in season one. Bane and Shead, on the other hand, privately make their contempt for the lost ones clear.
Yeah, so Ila plays an interesting role in this, like, very judgy. She's already eyeing Perrin's acts with judgment. But then at the end of the episode, she's like more proud of him than she is of Aram, which is like, oof.
You know, I said to you sometime in the middle of watching this episode, I messaged you and I said something like, the way of the leaf can suck it. Like, I am just so done with these fucking tinkers and their judgmental stuff. Like, I'm sorry, but if your philosophy wants you to let a baby die, then your philosophy is evil. That's truly my opinion. Especially, it's a Trolloc. This is a mindless monster at this point. Like, we don't know the origins of them, but at this point, they are mindless monsters who will do nothing but kill. If your philosophy makes you let that kill a baby, then your philosophy is evil.
I mean, on the other hand, I do feel for them, like, in the constant people expecting them to be different, like the moment where Maren Alfir says, oh, don't worry, we picked out the meat. I had flashbacks to so many times when I've been traveling and people have done that to me. And I have been more like Arn, where I'm like, okay, thanks. Just so you know, like, vegetarians don't want to eat the meat juice either.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. Like, I've been in that situation too, because I used to be a vegetarian. But also, like, there comes a point in your vegetarian journey where you have to realize that, like, bacon grease is on the griddle if you go out to eat. Somewhere you have touched bacon grease. You are not fully avoiding exposure to it.
I mean, I know people who have been really extreme in that, where they're like, I will not allow eat anything that's been cooked in pots that have cooked meat or things like that. And I'm not to that degree, but I can understand the people who are. But
that's then, like, kosher rules you're going with.
Yeah. I mean, but it basically it's the same sort of idea. But there's always, you have to find where is your own line, because I also completely understand Aram when he's looking at Ila when she says, we bury our dead and we go on, what else is there? And he's like, I don't know, maybe mourning your fucking husband, my grandfather. Like, I would be angry with Ila too at that moment. It's kind of what we saw Maxim get angry with Alana for similar reasons this season.
Yeah, I think any philosophy can be taken to an absurd extreme and be taken to dogmatic, problematic behavior. And Ila is certainly at that extreme with Tuathon.
But I think it's also in the case of, like, we bury our dead and go on. If we look at it the same as Alana, there's a self-protection in there too. Like, how do we cope with this loss? Well, we just keep going and bury it. Like, we don't just bury the dead. We bury our feelings about it.
Yeah. No, I like the way you put that. There's, I think I mentioned in our Severance podcast, somebody wrote in to ask for feminist book recommendations because we had mentioned, you know, some passages. And I had recommended a book called Patriarchy. It's called Why Does Patriarchy Persist? And the whole thing is about how patriarchy is essentially a set of scripts that people often fall back on when they're feeling pain, when they're feeling grief. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you could apply that to any dogma. And whether you agree with the way of the leaf or not, it is dogma, right? This is mm-hmm. a strict set of rules. And people often, and this is why people fall deeper into their religion and particularly into religious extremism, is it is easier to have a script and be able to take mindless action than it is to confront your feelings and the moral complexity around what occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's what you have here. And like, that's why I say, like, any belief system can be taken to an absurd extreme, religious or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is why Perrin, we see him struggling with, you know, we see him kill a lot of people this episode, but we also see him saying a lot of the most profound way of the leaf type things. Like at this point, he says, it may be the season of falling leaves, but when people see how bare the trees are, they will long for spring and your wagons will fill again. And he's saying lots of stuff like this, just really speaking to Illa's heart this episode and then going and killing a bunch of people. Do you think, why do you think, I mean, how would you describe the inner turmoil going on in Perrin?
Part of it I don't think makes sense. Like I understand he is like, I don't want to hurt people, and mm-hmm. yet my circumstances keep forcing me into situations where I have to hurt people.
Yeah.
And that's I'm reading the Stormlight archive right now, as I've talked about on another podcast. I'm like, there's other characters that deal with like similar things of like, should I go into a healing role or should I be a soldier against what I think is bad things?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really buy what he does at the end, because I do think that if he had killed Pat and Fane, the Trollocs would have lost any sense of like order, and probably the Two Rivers would have been successful. At the same time, there's an argument to be made that like Perrin doesn't know that for sure, and maybe his mm-hmm. best chance is to let Pat and Fane run away. But now let me argue against myself again, is that what's to stop Pat and Fane from getting out from under the axe and being like, just kidding?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, it's not like he was like, I'm going to follow you with this axe out of town. He just let him get up and go away.
Yeah, but also I think he did put an extra fear in Pat and Fane when he told Pat and Fane he could smell his fear. And he's like, you can do what? So
yeah, yeah.
I think he did make Pat and Fane the fear of like, I will find you. Well, especially if you're hanging around with the hundreds of Trollocs. So, yeah. A random question. Okay, so we'll get to this talk back when we get to the battle. But random question about this opening part. Do you think Loial understands Maiden Hand Talk now? Because he seemed to understand the gestures that the women were making about Aurum.
I wouldn't be shocked. Like, he's been spending a lot of time with them, and he's clearly a very smart creature. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll get to their scene in a bit, but it's I agree with you. I think he understands it at least a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like he's this. So show only people have heard us refer a few times to a character named Gaul, who's from the books, didn't make it into the show. And we saw part of his part go to like Avienda, for example. But I think Loial's definitely playing part of his role, too.
Mm. Yeah.
Although, yeah, it was Gaul was here with them, and he and Loial went to the gate together and blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Yes, just to point out, so they talk about all around the Two Rivers, because again, the Two Rivers is a region, it's actually four different towns. We'll talk about that more in this week's Lorecast. And turnips is what the Tuathon eat. So I guess when Maxim did the whole turnips and figs flirtation, I guess that was the Tuathon finally got to make their own food without meat in it.
Yeah, probably. The fig scene was pretty funny. I was like, oh boy, this is, oh, we're getting it on. But see, that was as much intimacy as I needed to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We did it.
And then they faded to black. Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. And we got the mm-hmm. whole message there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's what they've done throughout. That's
all right. We're not doing this again today,
Alicia. We're not doing this. All right,
we haven't the time.
Let's take a quick break here. And when we get back, let's talk about an unlikely alliance.
Yeah.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
We're back. For an unlikely alliance, Perrin sent Lord Luke to invite White Cloak Commander and men on an anti-Perrin mission, Dane Bornhold, to parley. Perrin argues that they should team up against the Trollocs, but Dane said he just can't trust the guy who killed his father. Perrin reminds him that he just had Natty killed and asks where this revenge spiral will end, if not here. Perrin questions what Dane really stands for, if he doesn't help them fight the Shadowspawn now. Perrin tells him that if the White Cloaks help them in battle, then Perrin will turn himself in afterward to face whatever the White Cloaks deem justice.
So, yeah, we got just a cursory Lord Luke mention again. Again, it's a book character, and we're wondering, I mean, we'll save this, I guess, mostly for White Tower talk, but I'm wondering if this is just one of those things where it's like, look, it's Daze Conger, okay, bye, or if we're actually, or, you know, or like, Jaichim Chin, who plays a much bigger, more complex role, and then in the show, it was just kind of like a nod. I don't know. What do you think, Lord Luke?
Full I want character? My Lord Luke. I want him.
I know. I do too. I think he plays an important role in Perrin's story, especially.
And it's not just like, can we have the side character? It's like, this is a major character, and to change this, I think would be, I think you'd have to make too many other character changes to make the arc work. Like, it would just feel very shoehorned to leave him out, especially because you already introduced him, right? Like, why not just leave him out altogether then?
Yeah, but then I am wondering, like, for instance, we also got Child Byer introduced in episode 5, which is like, oh, hi, Child Byer. And then, you know, it's only book readers are like, oh, hey, I know that name. But then we haven't even gotten, even in this episode, I don't think we saw him at all. So was that just like an Easter egg for book readers, or is that actually going to be a thing?
I don't know. I just can't Who's speculate at this point.
Who's to say? Yeah, okay. Anyway.
I feel like I have to download a River Song spoilers sound if we're going to go forward with this conversation.
Fair enough. Moving on to Loial and the Maidens. So first, Bane and Chiad question Loial about the book he's writing when they notice a name of a Menetheran king. King of Menetheran, whose name looks just like Rand's last name. And so again, yeah, the lore cast is going to be about the history of Menetheran, but it's the ancient kingdom that fell to the Trollocs on this very spot where they are battling now. And that was 2,000 years before current events, at least more than 2,000 years before current events. Althorin was the last king there. So I'm wondering, did an Althorin survive? And eventually that name morphed to Althor.
I think it's very possible. I was thinking when I was watching this, I was like, did they add that for the show? Because that might be a little cute. And like, no, it's definitely in the books. I just never even clocked it before.
Yeah. I don't think I really clocked it before either. So, that is interesting. Thank you to Chiad for pointing that out to us all.
And she, like, looks right at the camera, like Althor.
Althor.
Like Althor.
Did you get it? Like, well, honestly, I did not, so thank you. I have to say, Loial was looking rough this episode. Like, the way they did his makeup, he had the bags under his eyes, his ears were drooping. Like, I know it's from, he said that he had the longing, which, again, is what happens when Ogier are away from the Steading for too long, so. They certainly made him look like he had the longing.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to set up the Maiden's Kiss game?
I would love to. Loial tells the two that he's finally ready to play Maiden's Kiss, but he refuses both of their kisses when the game begins. By the rules of the game, they should spear him for not giving them a good kiss, but they don't want to harm Loial, so they make an excuse to end the game. He believes this counts as sparing his life, and thus the toe Chiad had towards him for saving her life is paid. But Bane argues that now she has Tobe because Loial risks his own life by playing the game with the intention of saving their lives by sending them away from the battle. So that cancels out. She adds Toe towards him, but now Bane has Toe, so she must stay and fight with Loial, and she, of course, goes wherever her sister goes.
Yeah, so I felt like that needed to be explained, but this is, I think it's just a, it's a silly aside, and again, another one of the things that's really prevalent in the books, and I find mildly annoying, where all the male characters are like, oh, but the women must be saved! but it is true, it's straight from the books, but I thought it was just a nice little aside that shows just the complications of the Aiel Toe system and Loial trying to figure them out.
Yeah, and I feel like it was, like, there definitely was part of that, like, sexist, you know, the women have to leave, but I think it was also partly, like, you two are my friends, and this is not your fight, right? Like, this is not your town. You could escape and go back to your people. And he was doing his best with that, too.
Yeah, yeah. But, as they say, it is dishonorable to cheat an Aiel of her Toe.
Yeah, I like the way they put that. Like, you kind of skipped over that in the recap because it probably would have made it, like, three more lines. But, yeah, it's interesting. And then they, like, logic around it. They were like, oh, but he was being noble because he was trying to bend the rules to save your life.
It's a lot of wiggle room in Toe based on personal interpretation.
Yeah, it's like many systems, you can interpret it to fit your belief system.
Yeah. All right, shall we take turns with this next section?
Yes, sure. You want to start?
Okay. While the town braces for battle, Loial and the maidens head out on their own mission to permanently close the Two Rivers Waygate so that more Trolloc reinforcements can't come through. Loial says his goodbyes to Perrin, promising that the story of Perrin and the Two Rivers will live on through his writing, whatever happens here, so that others may learn from these events in their own fights against the Shadow. Perrin thinks that Loial has taken his book with him to return to his steading to recover from the longing, but Perrin later finds that he's left his book behind.
At the Waygate, Loial, Bane, and Chiat fight off the guards and others who discover them, allowing Loial to slip inside. Using the trefoil leaf stone, he closes the gate with him on the inside. An army of Trollocs storms through the ways, intent on using the gate he's just closed to join the battle. So Loial uses his hammer to smash through the path beneath his feet. Loial falls with the Waygate and the island it was standing on into the nothingness below, but there is no longer a way for the Trolloc reinforcements to join the attack on the Two Rivers.
As Bane and Chiat fight to protect the Waygate from the other side, it explodes in a burst of light, visible even in the town. So what do you think about this? This is not a thing that happens in the books. Loial taking himself out with a Waygate.
Boo.
He does close the Waygate. He and Gaul close the Waygate. But this is a... Do you think, though, like, it was just giving me Gandalf vibes, you know, when he faces the Balrog and then falls and then he comes back later. Do you think we're going to get that?
I don't think we're going to get, like, divine intervention Gandalf, where Gandalf is purposefully sent back by the Valar. But I do think he'll come back. I mean, I don't know for sure. This could be anything could happen, but I think he'll come back for reasons later.
I mean, nobody knows the ways as well as an Ogier.
Yeah. And but, like, we don't know if there was something else underneath it, maybe. Like there was.
We saw him fall just into nothing, but we don't even really know what's down there in the book terms.
No, we don't. And maybe they'll address that. But I mean, like, is there another platform underneath it? Maybe, who knows? But like way down, and he'll fall on it. Maybe it'll
take to the place where people go skimming or something.
We'll see.
I do have a gripe with the fact that he just left his book behind, because like the last time the Trollocs attacked the Two Rivers, the Winespring Inn was burned down. So he's like, oh, people will hear your story, but I'm going to leave the book in the place that has a 50-50 shot of getting burned down.
Well, I think in his head, he's like, well, better than where I'm definitely going to die.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I guess there was no way. If he had to lock it from the inside and the Trollocs were coming, even if he were able to destroy the gate another way, it's not like, he's going to be stuck in there with the Trollocs, not to mention Ashin Chin.
Yeah, and in the books, like, the whole thing is, like, even if you take out the leaf from the outside, nobody will be able to go through it. So it's he didn't really need to. Or actually, I think he had to go in, get the leaf from the inside, and then take it out
and
on
then
the outside.
Take it out. Yeah.
But the point is, once you take away the leaves, you're fine.
Yeah, but they did destroy it just so that it couldn't be reopened anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, they took the leaves with them, and that way nobody could open it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how... This is the biggest part of the episode where I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. I understand. Well, for instance, like, I was a defender of the fact Uno's death in season two was a big surprise. Uno's still around in the books. But I thought that that was actually was a smart decision to make because I think it was a cool Uno way to go out. They made him tied to a hero of the horn, and I could see them doing certain things with that story in the future too. Like, could he be a specific hero of the horn that we know the name of as book readers? But you know, so I think that was a good way to handle it. Also, because Uno, he is a character people love because of his personality, not because he's necessarily so central to the plot, to particular plot turns. But I don't know. This one, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I guess I have to wait and see the repercussions of this.
Yeah, it did feel like an unnecessary change to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either he's going to stay dead and then book readers are going to be mad, or he's going to be alive and it'll feel kind of silly for him to have, like, fake died.
Yeah, because then if he's going to stay dead, does that mean, you know, I think it's safe to say that, you know, he opens up Ogier elements of the story. Spoilers. Because he's in... Yeah. Oh, there you go. He's in the Ogier land. So does that mean they cut out the Ogier stuff? I guess it depends how many seasons they get.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like they put themselves in a lose-lose with this, and it was completely unnecessary. They did not have to do this. They wanted a big stage. This is what I mean by, like, you are creating moments for TV and not telling the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess it depends. I'm waiting because I had a thought that I'm going to bring up in the White Tower segment about the Fael backstory change. So, you know, maybe I have to assume until shown otherwise that there's a reason why things are done, except for the season one finale. But we've already hashed that out enough.
Right. Yeah. I just look, there are, like, character moments that have changed that I think have been better done. Like, I talked about the Aram thing. I think in general,
everything with Leandrin. Yeah.
Yeah, I think in general, when you're adapting a work like this that's so beloved, you have to be like, okay, why is this beloved? Mm-hmm. And do I really know better than the author?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they really took the time to do that and, like, went around interviewing a bunch of people, like, why is it beloved to you? What are your favorite moments and things like that as they're deciding, like, what's essential to keep and how do we connect it all together? So that's why I think, anyway. Yeah.
I just want to say, like, I think one of the original sins of this series that we've mostly moved past, but I think this was one of the things that, like, may have been a straggler from that is supposedly when they started the series, they sent out surveys to big fans of Wheel of Time and they said, what things would you change from the books? And I just think that is the wrong philosophy to have. It should be, what do you love from the books?
Well, that is what they did. They asked all of the things. So I think that we shouldn't put an unnecessary, because it was mostly, what do you love? What are the most memorable moments and things like that? And that's why we got, you know, the stick fight, even though that's not necessary. Is it the most important plot wise? I don't know. Maybe not, but it feels important.
I think it's important character wise, right? Yeah. Like it's important for the two princes to be struck down a peg, which I think was undermined a little bit by not having it in public, but still happened. You know, I didn't complain a lot about that. I thought it was mostly good. And then you have Matt being like, I have skills for reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's an important character moment for him to, like, get a little bit of confidence, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Right. Should we get into the battle?
Yes. Though Loial and the Maidens manage to prevent the reinforcements from joining, the hundreds of Trollocs and Dark Friends who have already passed through the Waygate descend on the town. Luckily, since Trollocs can't swim and Alana's burned all the bridges, there's only one way into town, via the mountain pass. Perrin has set up stages to fall back when they must, the mountain pass, then the gate, then the square, and finally the Winespring Inn.
So yeah, we talked about that it is a series of battles over a week or so in the books, ending with the Battle of Emmons Field. That makes sense. But just wanted to shout out, I liked how they used, both times, they used a reprise of Sing for Manetherin before the battle. And then Loial sings it to himself after that before, which, okay, Loial's not from there, but I guess he feels a kinship and he's thinking of like, I'm doing this for Tyshar Manetherin. But yeah, for me, I found both. I really like that song, and I found both of those instances moving.
Okay, yeah. I mostly liked a lot of the character moments in this. I think this is where I might begin to be more critical. I know I just was more critical a minute ago, but I think the battle in general was where I started to go, not my favorite episode. Again, like, I think I said this to you, like, I did not like this episode. It's my least favorite episode of the season, of a great season. And so, like, something's got to be the worst episode in the season, right? Like, not all of them are going to be 10 out of 10. And I would put this one at, like, a 7 out of 10.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. Okay, well, while Perrin and Maxim take most of the locals to hold the pass for as long as possible, Alana takes the channelers to a higher vantage point where she can link with Daze and the Coffin Sisters to create a rain of large ice shards that takes out a big chunk of the shadow spawn, impressing the girls. Their attack chasing away the contingent at the pass, but when they return to town, the Trollocs sneak up on them there, and they spear Alana through the torso while Daze puts up a final fight. The Trollocs break through her unpracticed shield quickly, killing her. Yeah. So one character beat I could have done without is Daze throwing away her flask. I'm like, let the lady have one last drink before she goes.
Well, the character beat I could have gone without with her was suddenly being able to do a shield when they discovered that day that she can channel.
They're all fast learners. Tyshir Manetherin.
No.
They're all fast learners.
He can't keep getting away with this. I'm like my Todd Howard stage here.
I think one thing that's interesting from, you know, people who have read the books is that Perrin says at one point, the armor, the discipline, this isn't how Trollocs fight. It's like someone is controlling them. And it's like, in the books, yes, always, like Trollocs on their own, they'll do raids and things like that. But they are not an organized, motivated group.
Animalistic because they're part animal.
Right. So they, if they're being driven into battle by this, they are always being driven by someone. Usually, Myrdral. We got no Myrdral this season. I guess they thought they did enough. We get
also. I'm sure that's a budget point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's other Shadow Spawn that people are like, where are the Drakkar? Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I feel like that might be a hard one to explain. Like that, this is what I'm saying. Like, there are things I will excuse for it being TV. Like, there are things that like make sense. Like, all right, we're not going to have like the super complicated creatures, right? And is for both budget and time for explanation. I think I'm looking for. Are you doing the most with what you have?
Right. Right. And that's why, like, there were people who were genuinely like, I thought that there would be a green man at the eye of the world. I'm like, I never thought that they were going to do that. And I don't blame them for just being like, nah, just let's simplify that.
I mean, I could have seen Robert Jordan rewriting that ending, right? Like, it doesn't make sense. The ending of the Eye of the World doesn't make sense. I love the book. It hooked me on the Wheel of Time right away. Mm-hmm. The ending makes zero sense compared to the rest of the series.
I mean, the book overall, a lot of the magic things that happen in it in particular is the most out of line with the rest of the series because he was sort of just working things out.
Right.
So some elements he was like, oh, yes, this is a through line through the rest of the books. And then other things just happened. And then, like, we don't talk about it anymore. Like the one Trolloc Narg who speaks Narg smart.
Yeah, and like, look, there's different styles of writing, and like, there's the gardeners like Jordan and Martin and Tolkien, and then there's the outliners like more of a Sanderson kind of thing. I think they each have pros and cons. One of the cons in gardening is you will often find a cool thing to do and later be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, maybe I should have pruned that branch, yeah.
Like, I think George R. R. Martin said, like, oh, I accidentally killed a character in the last book.
At one point. Right, and he had to go back and rewrite part of it. Yeah. I have theories about that, but yeah. Okay, one other complaint that I have. My biggest complaint about the show in general is they do the fake out death or near death too much. And right now, Alana is just becoming a regular old pincushion.
Yeah, she's either like completely healthy or on her deathbed. There is no in the
middle. And always like filled with arrows.
You could use her as like a clothes hanger. Like you could just always, she's always got poles sticking out of her.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could do with less of that because then it makes, I want, when the deaths happen, I want them to hit harder.
Yeah, I think it cheapens it. And like that makes it so that even though we're not sure if Loyal will come back, like we're like, I don't even care at this point. Like,
yeah,
it did not, that did not feel like a gut punch to me. I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because, yeah, I don't know whether or not to trust it because they've trained me not to trust deaths in the show because also Loyal got stabbed and it looks like he was dead at the end of the first season. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to set up with Days Dead?
With Days Dead, Alana unable to channel, and the other two girls too tired to muster more weaves to heal Alana, the army of farmers is on his own, and they quickly lose ground, falling back to the wall. But the Trollocs have strangely fallen away again. Then the White Cloaks arrive, led by Dane. Perrin throws open the gate for them, not knowing that Padden Fane and a group of Dark Friends has infiltrated their number. And now the town. Perrin outs Fane as a Dark Friend, and his troops begin turning on the rest of the White Cloaks and the townspeople, killing them. The Trollocs overwhelm the soldiers, trying to close the gate again, and the battle has now reached the center of town.
So we got this whole talk from Maxim, soldiers don't win battles. What wins battles is being too dumb to know when you're beat, too stubborn to fall down and die. And it works so for me as a motivating speech, but I do have to say Maxim knows his audience because people call the Two Rivers people wool-headed because they're sheep farmers and they are stubborn. They are known to be the stubbornest people.
Yeah, for sure. Did you think that they were going to do the whole Dark Friend thing as like a way to get Perrin out of his oath?
What do you mean?
I did.
How so?
I thought they were going to have, because in the books, and now we can
saying you were with the Dark Friend, so I don't have to go with you.
Yeah, you didn't help. You hurt us.
Yeah. He says, I didn't know about Fane. You should have. Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you not do background checks here? No, because in the books, they have this whole thing where, like, he makes the same deal of, like, you help us, I'll go with you. And then he does, they just don't show up, right? They just sit out the battle, and the Two Rivers survives anyway. And he's like, well, you got to come with us now. He's like, you didn't come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so obviously I'm not going to go with you, you fucking morons.
Yeah.
And I thought here it was going to be the same thing of like, and I thought they were going to complicate it with that, which mm-hmm. I could see doing, right? Like I could see it being a little bit more morally gray for Perrin to be like, hey, you brought enemies here. Like you didn't help. I'm not going with you now. I don't know which ones of you are Dark Friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like he could have gotten out of it. And I don't know. That's definitely another topic for the White Tower is what we think is going to happen next since he did go with them. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I that would have been a way to get out of it, but I guess they wanted to amp up the tension and escalate the situation. And probably because it's driving future plot points faster, I suppose. Because maybe what's going to happen while Perrin's away.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Or maybe Perrin's going to die. Who knows? Yeah. Anybody dies now.
They just kill off Perrin. No.
Man.
You know what's funny is Brandon Sanderson's favorite character to write when he finished the books was Perrin. And I was always like, Perrin is like one of my least favorite characters to read. So I'm like,
well, this is the part in Perrin's story where he starts to become interesting to me when he starts to just embrace the different aspects of, you know, being Lord Goldeneyes, of being with Fael, of being a wolf brother, you know.
I would take almost any other character above mid-season Perrin. Mid-books Perrin.
Okay. Is that about him as a character, or is that about some interminable drama going to be covered in two episodes in the show?
Yeah, well, that, but also, like, just so much side questing, you know, like, mm-hmm. so much. And that's Jordan's problem. It's not Perrin's problem.
No, yeah. No, I think that Perrin has some interesting plot points. The problem is they drag on too long, and that's definitely obviously not going to be a problem with the show.
Right, yeah.
So just a shout out for book readers would got excited when Perrin picked up both a hammer and an axe, but they haven't really talked about hammers and axes connected to Perrin. So just to point out, book readers are going to yell whenever Perrin picks up a hammer or an axe.
Yeah. That's true. It's the Leo pointing at the screen meme.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually a thing, I guess I can say, because Varen, actually, she told Perrin this there's a prophecy tied to the Wolf King and the hammer and the axe. And she was in the Two Rivers and told Perrin this, but she's not there and nobody told Perrin this, so I will hold back saying it too.
Yep.
White Cloak Inquisitor Eamon Valda discovers where the Cawthon girls are hiding with the arrow-pierced Alana, and Valda recognizes all three as those known to him as witches, realizing now he burned the mother for the sin of her daughters. But the exhausted girls muster up enough energy to channel a blast of fire at him, which John loved, burning Valda to a crisp, just as he'd done their mother and countless Aes Sedai before them. So... yeah, I said the fast learning talent thing. It is true that healing waves are more complex than fire blasts, so that would have been an easier one for them to do. But I know you don't like how quickly they did it, but it's poetic justice at least, right?
Yeah.
That he got burned?
I'm okay with him dying here. He's kind of an exhausting character. Mm-hmm. And like, he just feels... Here's the thing about the White Cloaks is like, they often feel like really small potatoes when you have like the fate of the world at stake.
Right. Yeah, they're like, yeah, petty middle management.
But then you're also like, that's kind of realistic. Is like, we have a real problem to solve and you guys are just annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I do have to say it was a bit dark of the girls and Alana, because I realized he'd recognized them and he was like looking at them nastily because that's what he does. But he had not attacked them when the girls attacked him. And then Alana laughs. She's like, oh, I'm dying, but it's so nice to see you die faster.
I mean, they knew that he burned her mom. And they also knew he would do that to them. Like, there was no question of that.
He burned a lot of Alana's sisters. He tortured Egwene and Perrin. You know, he's not a good dude, and nobody's sad to see him go. But
I will not begrudge Alana her laugh. I'll just say it.
Okay. Should we take one more quick break and then talk about the messy retreat and the consequences?
Sounds good. We're back. A messy retreat. Knowing they would, of course, never fight, Perrin asks Illa if she and the Tuathon will take the children out a secret tunnel and run if the battle looks lost. So when the lines fall back to the town square, that's what they do. But they don't get far before they are discovered and begin to be slaughtered by the Trollocs. Aram falls while running with a crying baby strapped to his chest. He notices a Trolloc's dagger has fallen within arm's reach, and he picks it up, plunging into the side of the Trolloc attacking him and the baby. He saves himself and the baby, but looks up to see Illa watching. The same look in her eyes Rand's ancestor saw in his mother's eyes when he broke the way of the leaf in Rand's visions in Rhaedon. Aram is no longer Tuathon.
So, yeah, lots of hate for the way of the leaf going around. I have a bit more sympathy, but I understand. I mean, I'm glad we got the setup so that we have this better understanding of why Aram is now shunned by his people.
Yeah. Back in town, Perrin finds and pins down Padden Fain. He says he will spare Fain's life if he calls off the attack and never returns. Once they see the light of the exploding waygate, Fain knows reinforcements are no longer coming, so he accepts Perrin's offer and scampers off with the remaining Trollocs. The people of the Two Rivers celebrate.
So we get his motivation speech. Hate you. I don't care about you. I don't care about this place. The great lord wants to wipe the Two Rivers off the map. I don't know why I'm doing this accent. To make a point to the dragon reborn? Great. It's not clear in the show, and I don't think it really matters whether he's actually from the Two Rivers. In the books, he's from another place, a city called Lugard, which may or may not even be a thing in the show. But he was a face that they looked forward to. He wasn't from there, but it was like, so that would mean he would have less attachment to it. But to them, he was like their main peddler guy. You know, they look forward to him coming and bringing the news and the goods and all that stuff.
Yeah, he was just their little guy. And I think that's an accurate portrayal of how he was in the books, too. Mm-hmm. His attitude toward the True Rivers.
Yeah, exactly. And I brought up earlier about, like, so Fain tries to bluff, and Perrin says, then why do you smell so afraid? And that's another, you know, book pointing meme reader thing, because Perrin and his smell, that's a wolf brother thing they haven't explored yet, but he can smell emotions.
Right. He can smell crime.
You know, that was Huron.
I know. But Perrin can, like, kind of do it in a roundabout way.
Yeah. And that's exactly why they made the very sensible decision to not have Huron in the show and just fold him into Elias, because, it's sort of redundant powers.
Fine by me.
Yeah, makes sense.
Although I did love Huron.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one, like Uno, where, like, people like Huron because of his personality more than he's super important to the plot, per se.
Huron is also, like, one of the most famous Tolkien characters, so maybe they figured it might confuse the Tolkien people.
Good point. Okay, but my big question here is, would the Dark One or the Forsaken or whoever gave Fain this order, gave Fain this order, would they let him retreat? I mean, I guess he'll be punished.
Oh, he's done for. He's donezo.
Like, that's not going to fly.
No. I think that's fine. We'll probably see, like, his moment, or maybe he just won't go back to them, right? He'll try to hide.
So he was more afraid of losing his life on the spot versus the maybe certainty of getting really bad punishment from the shadow.
Well, there's something that they haven't really made clear in the show, but in the books it's very clear that, like, the Dark One has full power over the dead. And and so maybe he's like, well, the quickest way for me to go suffer is to die and go right to the Dark One. So maybe I could, like, squeak out a few more years here running around.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense that as soon as he's not pressing them, as soon as there's, like, normally he would have Myrdral as the, you know, lieutenants and stuff, but as soon as they're not pressing the Trollocs, they scatter. They are not, like, let's go to battle beings.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, so that leads to the final consequences. The next day, Alana is healed, the girls presumably having recovered enough to help her. She does say they saved her life twice. Their story this season likely coming to an end. Alana and Maxim have gotten through their morning rut, finding new ways to work together as a duo, both in and out of bed. The Cawthon sisters ask if Alana will take them to the White Tower to train, but she says the pattern has bigger plans for them.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Do we have to save it for the White Tower? Do you have any thoughts on
spoilers?
Yeah. I don't know where. Yeah, where is she taking them? To Arfeld?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Yeah. No, I genuinely don't know where she would be taking them, even as a book reader.
Yeah. We're not being cute about it.
No. Mm-mm. So that'll be interesting. Egwene's mother, Marin Alfir, finds Aram sitting forlornly in the square, and she points out that the town needs a new blacksmith, and he might have some related experience mending pots and pans with the Tuathon, whom the Two Rivers folk call the Tinkers. And Perrin finds Loial's book, realizing his friend knew it was a suicide mission. Yeah, I feel like this is all setting up Two Rivers stuff for season 4. Do you think we'll get any check-ins in the season finale? Because they still have to cover the other three locations.
Do you think that they're new his aftermath of the getting arrested? Perrin's aftermath?
I don't know. I don't know if like this is if they'll check in on that at all, or because do they have time next week?
I don't know. I think honestly, maybe they don't. I'm changing my mind. Unless it's like a, do you know the length of the finale? Because I didn't even look.
I think it was like 1 hour and 7 minutes. So
okay, they don't have time. They don't have time. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not extra long or anything. And they have like three big setups we'll talk about in a minute, but yeah. I do want to point out that, because I pointed out last time, the Aiel said, life is a dream from which we all must wake. Now we hear the second part of that, before we can dream again. So that's the whole tying into the reincarnation thing.
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to set up the final beats?
The White Cloaks return to town, led by Dane, to collect on Perrin's promise. Perrin honors the deal he made. He tells the town folk, his fiery girlfriend, to stand down. And he allows himself to be handcuffed and taken away to face whatever the White Cloaks deem justice. The people scream the name of Lord Perrin Goldeneyes of the Two Rivers as the White Cloaks lead him out of town.
Yeah, I liked, because this is definitely something Perrin struggles with in the books, like where the way of the... Well, okay, I'll say the way of the leaf or not. There's another, I was going to say something else, but maybe I already said earlier, maybe that's too spoily to talk about his weapon situation. But, he's struggling with what he feels is a need for violence and just not particularly enjoying committing violence. And so he says to Fael, just like it was your choice to fight, it is my choice to stop fighting. Can you respect that? Do you think Fael's going to respect that?
No, not even for a minute.
No, come on. And then you see Illa beaming as in like, why can't Aram be more like Perrin? Like, dude, Aram killed one Trolloc. Perrin killed how many people? Dark friends still, but yeah.
I just don't agree with anything Illa does.
She gave a great speech to Perrin last season, and apparently he's still hung up on it.
Yeah. Our Who among season. Us hasn't heard a good podcast?
She would be a good podcaster. Would you listen to the Way of the Leaf podcast?
No, I might, and I'd give it a 1-star review. Just kidding, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. That's podcaster to podcaster courtesy.
Hmm. What podcast in this universe would you listen to?
That's a good question. I think it would be interesting to hear Tom talk about all the different myths.
Oh, yeah. That would be so good. Oh, please give Tom a podcast. I was going to say like White Tower Dispatches, but they would be really empty of actual messages, but I would be dissecting them to find deeper meaning.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, so any final thoughts on, I don't know, this might be the end of the Two Rivers story for this season?
It was fine. It was fine. I think of the arcs, it's been the weakest arc this season, but it was not bad, for sure. It was good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just hoping that they really nail the finale so that I forget about all of this. Like, I will eat my words.
Next week
is amazing.
What do you hope for in the finale?
I need to call River Song again.
Just all right, well, we will talk about that.
Wrap up Tangiko and the Waste really satisfactorily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean there's a bunch of threads that are still dangling out there from prior seasons. Like, I would love to see Loghain in the finale. He should be locked up at the White Tower now. So we're going to check in at the White Tower. We know that from the episode description. Tell me what Loghain's up to. Like, stuff like that. We haven't really addressed much the fallout of the Shan Chan. I would like that to be checked in on. And Tenshiko is the perfect place to do it because it's also on the coast near Falm, where the last finale was. So... I don't know how they can possibly do it all, but I hope that they tie more things together. Yeah.
I think they're going to push a lot of loose threads the next season, but I think they could do a really good job if they just focus intensely on Tanjiko and the Isle Waste.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that extra conversation I'm going to have with Jean to check in on his non-book reader reactions and expectations for the finale, because he's going to be able, obviously, to talk much more freely.
Right. He's going to go off on the Way of the Leaf, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's not a fan of the Way of the Leaf either.
No. And the Aes Sedai are going to get it too.
Yeah. and deservedly so.
Yes. But for subscribers, for Supercast and Patreon subscribers, this week's Lorecast is Manetherin and the Two Rivers. So talking about what was and what is now. And also do check out last week's extra Lorecast, which was breaking down the new songs from episode 6 of this season, including lore about the Horn of Valir and also the Wheel of Time civilization mod that never was. And check out also last week's Mailbag in the Public episode, also with Mark from Nevermind the Music. Lots of Wheel of Time content coming out. And I'm sorry, I know I said we'd slow down, but not for the Wheel of Time.
No, I gave up on that. That initiative is gone.
Well, I mean, yeah, hopefully.
It's my fault, too. Like, I literally just planned an extra podcast with Aaron and Marilyn.
Right. Okay. For Endor?
No, well, we were talking about the War of the Rohirrim.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, but I'm really excited for that because I don't really know much about the Rohirrim lore, and I'm curious.
I honestly, the Rohirrim are my weakest point of Tolkien lore, so I'm going to be relying a lot on the other two. I know Aaron especially is really into the Rohirrim lore, so it's awesome. Going to be cool.
Exciting. And for people who are into the Wheel of Time lore, do you want to explain the whole season pass situation?
$10 and you get the show guide. You get the bonus lore cast every week. And honestly, more often than that, because Alicia's got two bonus ones already. And you get ad-free episodes for just the Wheel of Time this season. And then, of course, you could always become a recurring subscriber for $5 or $10 if you want your name read at the end of the episode. But a recurring subscriber will get you all of our bonus content and all of our podcasts ad-free.
Yep. Or if we really appreciate you just listening, you can help us out for free by sharing this episode or leaving a positive review wherever you're listening, especially if you mentioned the Wheel of Time. And yeah, we talked about there's obviously the War of the Rohirrim episode coming up. We've got Daredevil episode that came out before this, as we're recording, it's going to be coming out. White Lotus season finale episode, I think.
Yes, we're doing that on, I think we're recording that Wednesday night. I double booked us for, I have to do back-to-back recordings of Wheel of Time and then the Doctor Who. We're recording the first episode for that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're recording the first episode because we got screeners. Yeah, thank you. That's so helpful. And of course, full coverage coming up for The Last of Us and Andor. Phew.
I know. Yeah. I don't even know what we're going to do with ourselves.
So if that's not enough for you to hear, well, there's a lot more. So check out the link tree in the show notes with all the affiliates, Radioactive Ramblings, We'll Shift Dust, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, Nevermind the Music, Properly Howard, Rings and Rituals. And of course, there is in there the link to the Discord where there's all the lots of hopping conversation for the Wheel of Time.
A lot of hopper conversations.
A lot of not enough hopper conversations, if I'm perfectly honest.
Show the wolf some respect.
And if you want to show the wolf some respect in feedback for our feedback episode at the end of the season, then please send that to watt@thelorehounds.com.
That's right. And Nancy will receive your feedback. Thank you, Nancy, our keeper of the Chronicles, and we'll do it for the end of the season.
Yes, absolutely. Do you want to read the names?
If I can open the document, I absolutely will. We've got our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Dove71, Athena A., Tina Listu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition and Radioactive Richard, and our lore masters, Martian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian P., S.C., Peter O.H., Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Mua, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, and Adrian. Thanks, everyone, for all your support. It really does help and helps us do all these way too many coverages.
Thank you. And White Tower Talk with all the book spoilers after the outro.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions, feedback, and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all our episodes at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Okay, the gag order has been removed. We are now talking about all of the books. So, yeah, really, we're going to talk some major spoilers here. So, you have been warned. We have to talk first, of course, about this Loial death. And does this mean he never falls in love?
No, he's coming back. And this is stupid that they're even doing this. I'm just going to say that. Like, I didn't want to explicitly say he's coming back, but like, if they don't bring him back, that would be dumb. And the way that they did this fake out death was foolish. It was one of the things that most made me groan about this episode.
Yeah.
An episode filled with a bunch of groans.
I mean, I didn't find it filled with a bunch of groans, but this was a thing where I was like, I don't understand why this is happening. Like, why does he need to be out of the way for a while? I guess I don't know. I just don't like that. I think they've played the fake out death card too many times so far. They need to stop immediately.
And it just feels like it's in service of a spectacle in a way that is not earned.
But I mean, I guess the other options are, what if they were forced to only have one more season? Then I think Loial would be gone for good and they would just cut all of the Ogier plotline.
I don't think they could wrap this up in one more season. I think it would be a disaster.
I mean, it would be a disaster, but they would have to, do something drastic. Yeah. And we would just not get most of the story. And that would be such a shame. And it would always be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's the thing. Like, either you cut out the Ogier storyline or you have another Ogier step into the picture. But then it's like, we don't want another Ogier. We want Loial.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. But one thing is, on the other hand, I was thinking about the difference in Fael's backstory with her parents. And so now they said both of her parents are generals, which, yeah, fine, great. You know, in the books, it was her father was a general, and that's, yeah. Both of her parents generals, her mother is a dark friend. I'm like, what if we got a Bashir Bowl where they were generals and armies that were fighting each other?
Okay. All right, fine. I mostly like, I don't want Deera, if her name is Deera, right?
Yeah.
I don't want Deera to be a dark friend. I want this to be a lie by Fael.
I don't want Fael to, I would rather Deera be a dark friend because frankly, I don't really care that much about Deera. She's fine. She's sassy. She could be a fun dark friend. But I don't want Fael to have lied to Perrin that big. It's one thing for her to lie a little bit about her name still. And I don't understand why she's doing that if she's already said her parents are generals. But I don't want her to have lied about something that big as Perrin told her his whole heart and all of his deepest secrets. You know, that just makes me feel icky.
Well, Fael is kind of icky in the books too. She does a lot of stuff that makes me go ick.
Well, she's mostly jealous.
Yeah, but then later in the books, like when she's like, I want to flirt with this guy, but also I'm going to be the most jealous person ever. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. You just kind of suck.
Yeah, I mean, that's where that is where she's annoying. And then also just the plot around her being kidnapped for way too long. Oh my God.
it is an eternity, an absolute eternity.
Yeah. But I hope on the parent side, as we alluded to earlier with Lord Luke, we need Slayer. And, you know, when I was thinking, like, with they are kind of, they've at least left it open for the complications of who Slayer is, because, yeah, I don't know. Or what if they made half of Slayer Rand's dad instead of his uncle?
Rand's dad? Oh, like his birth dad. I was like, Tam?
Yeah. No, not Tam. Sorry.
I was like, no.
Sorry.
Don't you dare besmirch the name of Tam Althor.
No, like, it's okay. So for anyone who doesn't know, both Rand's dad and uncle, and so his uncle being Galad's father, who is Elaine's. Okay. Yeah. It's complicated. So we had the Karyanin family married into the Andor family. And then we had the daughter heir, who was Rand's mom, who just wandered off into the waste and fell in love with an Aiel man. And then his father, and then her husband married Morghaze. And then he wandered off, right? But he wandered into the Blight. And Rand's dad, after his mom died, Rand's dad also wandered into the Blight. But then they have like two separate stories. So what if they just combined those stories, if anyone followed all of that?
The Andorran royal family has never heard of the buddy system. Not once.
No. Well, because Katara also told a couple, I think she told Tigraine and Jonduin maybe also to, I don't know, she encouraged some of them. Like, you have to go wander off because prophecies.
Right. Yeah, look, I'd be fine with that. Like, I don't really care who is the person merges with Lord Luke. I don't think that changes anything dramatically.
Right. But I just want him, I want the wolf dream thing. I want that to be a major focus next season. And I want Slayer to be that menacing presence on Perrin's side. It's almost like Slayer's like the Forsaken of Wolf Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's cool. I think Slayer is a really interesting villain.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I love that I just recently listened to the real Wheel of Time books when I go to sleep sometimes. It's because they're very comforting to me. And of course, comforting is a battle with a person in the dream world. Mm-hmm. And this whole part where like Perrin sends him off once by like pulling him into a nightmare. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think we need to do that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I just love so much also that like Perrin is secretly building up all these wolf dream skills, not realizing that, you know, say Egwene is building up dreams in Teleron Riad, and then finally they meet and it's like, wait, you know how to
Yeah, I love there's this part where like Egwene's been doing this forever and Perrin right. sees her and is like, you shouldn't be here, it's dangerous, you don't even know. And she's like, yeah. Girl, yeah. I know exactly what I'm doing here.
Yeah, because that is, they do spend so much time separated, so it's fun when they meet back up in unexpected places like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now that we're on the other side of the River Song, what do you think Alana's bigger plans might be? Or I assume they're not going back to the tower, because I think in the finale we're going to get the setup for the split in the tower, and then I think season 4 will start with the split in the tower, and immediately a bunch of them will go to Saladar, so it makes sense if Alana and the girls just go straight to Saladar. But where does she think she's going right now?
I have no idea. And I just want to say, on the tower split thing, what do you mean by we'll get the setup? Like, are we going to get Swan confronted and then no split yet?
I don't know how far they would get. So I have to say, I read a review where someone said that they didn't get as far as they expected. And I just think there's also not enough time to do like the full, I don't, okay. So let's just check in on what do we have to do in the finale. We have Alcar Dahl on the waste side. Do we think there's got to be at least like one big dramatic moment? Could it be Rand unleashing the water in Roydian?
Yeah, I think that could be it. I don't think we're going to get Asmodian at all. At all here. I saw an interesting theory today somewhere, I think on Reddit, where somebody said like maybe Asmodian will be like guarding the Stone of Tyr and we still get him.
Okay.
Because it would be cool to have Rand get this like power boost of like, I'm getting trained by a Forsaken.
Yeah. But I just thought that like Loghain was going to be that role, because they already set him up for that last season.
Yeah, but the Forsaken know so much more about the power.
I know, right? It's true.
So he could have multiple teachers too.
Yeah.
Like Loghain could have fulfilled that role early and that kept him in a little longer, and then he'll go to do the Black Tower stuff later.
Yeah.
And then you could have Asmodian showing him like, hey, here's how to like travel and stuff like that, right? I know Rand like kind of figures that out himself with his memories, right. but still.
But maybe now Lanfear, now that Rand knows that Lanfear was torturing Egwene, he's not going to want to be around her anymore. And so to keep him around, she'll be like, okay, I'll train you / find someone to train you or something like that.
Yeah, they have done the work of saying a woman can't train a man in the power and vice versa.
Right, but Lanfear does actually tell him a lot in the books. And then she's like, well, I can't directly do it. So she brings in Asmodian, but she does teach him a lot, even though she can't like see his weaves or vice versa.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah.
Okay, so we have that. I mean, I'm assuming. Okay, so we're going to have Rand with Alcar Dahl, but also there has to be some sort of Rand-Lanfear confrontation. But then also we have in Tenchiko, obviously, all those characters are going to converge in the Panarch's Palace. We're going to get like our whole crew. We're going to get Mogedion. We're going to get Leandrin there. They're going to be looking for the collar and the bracelets are in function. You and I are definitely expecting some ancient artifacts to be there.
Yep.
And maybe a doorway. Do we dare hope that there will be a twisted frame that Matt will fall through?
I think, I honestly don't know. I think that might be saved till next season. That's a lot. That's a lot to cram in.
I know, but I...
Then why did they bring him with them?
Yeah, and the whole fact... They have to resolve the fact that Min's been seeing him hanging the whole season.
Yeah, but I mean, they could leave that going. Like, it could be just she didn't see it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they set that up so strongly that it feels like it needs to be resolved this season.
I don't know what to expect on what they want we'll to resolve see. The season because yeah, we'll they're see. So we'll like see. Weird about the pacing of the show.
But then that's the thing is like, so we have all that fit in. I don't know if there's any time to check back in on what's going on in the Two Rivers or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Or, no, I think or you're right. For the tower to fully break. Like, I think we might just get Elida calling a vote or something, or I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that they can have another full tower battle since they started the season with that. And also since there's going to be so much else they have to spend the money on.
Right. Well, that's what I mean is like, what if they just have her have Elida kick open the door and confront her and that's it. That's all you see.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
I could see that. Well, they definitely don't have like time to do like the warders battling or whatever.
Or there's a tower vote and it goes against Swan.
Yeah. Some kind of foreshadowing.
Yeah. How do you think Perrin's going to get out of the situation? I was thinking maybe what if Fael's kidnapped while Perrin is with the White Cloaks?
That could be or the thing is I would be okay with them like resolving his whole culpability with the White Cloaks early. Like I honestly felt like that was a little bit of a dragged out situation too, and I didn't think the trial was very satisfying. But maybe Dane has a change of heart. Like he already did have a little bit of a change of heart with, bringing the White Cloaks in general. I could see him sort of like cooling off a little bit and realizing he did wrong with Natty Cawthon and being like, let's call it even.
Yeah, that's why I hesitate to say I want it to be over too quickly, just because I do think, and I assume the reason they're doing this is to let Perrin and Dane start to bro out, especially without Gaul. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. And I think, especially now they've taken out Valda, they've already resolved the Fane thing. We've already, even Jaichim Carradine, who was a Dark Friend White Cloak, he's already gone. he was the whole thing in the books, but anyway, just the Grey Man this season. Maybe starting next season, they're ready to start like softening the White Cloak image a bit.
Yeah, maybe. It takes a long time in the books, and I'd be okay with them speeding that up, too. And also, like, are they going to have Galad join the White Cloaks at all?
I think so.
I hope so.
I'm surprised. But I wonder, ooh, that's a good question too. Are the princes going to show up in Tanchico at the end of the season? Or is that it? Have we seen, or are they still in the tower and will be involved in whatever is there? Or have we just seen the end of them for this season?
They intercept them on their way to Saladar, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's later. But yeah, maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll figure it out.
I mean, I don't know. It seems like they had them there. They could have at least filmed a scene at the tower if they're supposed to. I don't know if they're supposed to be still at the tower now or if they've left looking for Elaine.
I don't know either. The show has not shown us the tower in a long time.
Yeah, well, definitely gonna check in the finale. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts or hopes or questions?
I hope Amazon gives us the finale screener soon because now I want to watch.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I wish I could press play now, but we don't even have access because we sacrificed it for all of the listeners so that we didn't watch ahead.
They gave us access at first and we just didn't watch ahead. And now we only have access through 7, but they said they'll give us access ahead. So hopefully episode 8 is not delayed for us.
Yes. So hopefully we'll be watching that soon. But for now, yeah, really, I'm excited about the finale because there's so much in there that I love from the books that I can't wait to see how it plays out. And Savannah's coming back.
All right there.
Never thought I'd calm be excited yourself. To see her. Yeah, I guess that's it then for this week. So do check in on the Supercast and Patreon feeds for the Lorecast about Manetherin and the Two Rivers.
See you there.
Bye.
The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. In one podcast, called The Lorehounds by Some, a weekly recap with tons of analysis, two Wheel of Time superfans will lead you through a world of powerful magic, tricky prophecies, and cutthroat politics. Join me, John, and my co-host Alicia for weekly coverage of Season 3 by searching your podcast app for The Lorehounds. Dovyandi Setovas again. It's time to roll the dice.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.